The commercialization of Christmas. It's always been a touchy subject for me. It's always been actually a frustrating subject for me. Really, anything that distracts and takes Christ out of Christmas has been a problem for me through the years. All of these third-party additions to Christmas, these third-party add-ons, you know, icons like Santa Claus, or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman. And I've gotten frustrated through the years of those things because it's so easy to get caught up in enjoying these third-party add-ons that we miss the true enjoyment of the season, of what we're really supposed to be celebrating, that Jesus Christ was born. But then through the years, I kind of realized something else, that as that pendulum had swung over here, that even over here you can miss the joy of the season by being so distracted with being so disappointed in these third-party icons, in these third-party additions. You can get so caught up in disgust and protest and, "I'm not watching that movie because it's not about Jesus. I'm not participating in that because it has nothing to do with the cross." And I thought to myself, I thought, "Dusty?" That's what I call myself. I thought, "Dusty, this isn't good either." Because we can get so far over here that we get so distracted. And it's easy to get over there and it's easy to get grumpy, isn't it? And you get negative and you rob yourself of the joy of this holiday over here. And I mean, who wants to be around a person like that? Mr. Scrooge. And yet we use this and we go out in the name of this and we tell people, "I'm not celebrating that because I'm celebrating the true joy of Christmas." Really? I wouldn't have guessed. And that's how we get sometimes. And as I've watched this pendulum swing, I think, you know, neither end of this is really healthy for being able to enjoy Christmas, to be able to get into the true meaning of Christmas. And so this year, I'm going to try and take a new look at things. I'm going to try and take a new angle at things. I'd like to invite you all to join me in this as we do something different. What I'd like to do this year is I'd like to take all of these third-party Christmas add-ons, all of these additions, and I would like to embrace them. I would like to take all of these worldly practices, all of these secular celebration sides of Christmas, I would like to embrace them. And I would like to do so in such a way that allows me to see more Christ in Christmas by doing that. Now, there are a lot of you out there that might be thinking, "Preacher, that doesn't sound so Christian. You're wanting to embrace secular celebrations? You're wanting to embrace secular practices, worldly practices?" Yes, you heard me correctly. And before you think that doesn't sound very Christian, I want to say something that might be even more shocking than what I've already said. And that is that I believe Jesus Christ did this very thing. What? While Jesus Christ was here on earth, he was confronted, and some people came up to him and they asked him about paying taxes. Now, taxes back in Jesus' day was quite a bit different than taxes in our day. Taxes back then was a way of paying homage to the ruler, to the Roman Caesar that was in power over their land. It was a way of giving them honor. And in some forms, it was a form of worship. And so these people that came to Jesus and they asked him about paying taxes, a worldly practice, a worldly custom, a secular belief. And Jesus, of all the people that walked the earth in his time, would have been the very least that would have needed to pay homage to the Roman Caesar. And of all the people that walked the earth at that time, that could have rightfully, righteously, truthfully condemned the practice of paying taxes to Caesar, argued against it, been disgusted with it, Jesus would have been the man to argue against those things. But what does Jesus do? We read that story. I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat. What are you going to do, Jesus? What's going on? You know what Jesus does? He embraces it. He doesn't condemn it as we might expect him to. In fact, he asked for a coin. He asked if someone has a coin. They hand him a coin. He said, well, whose picture is on that coin? Whose name is on that coin? They said, well, that's Caesar's name. That's Caesar's picture. Well, then you give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. And you give to God what belongs to God. He took that worldly practice, that secular view, and he turned it around to a teaching moment. And so that's where the idea came from. Let's take that and let's do that with these third-party icons during Christmas. And instead of going way over here and celebrating them in such a way that we miss the focus, or going way over here and get so disgusted with them that we still miss the focus, let's embrace them. Let's allow these third-party icons, these things that really have nothing to do with Christ, to allow us to focus more on Christ. And how we're going to do that is we're going to look at some famous Christmas movies. Does that sound like fun? All right. We're going to look at some famous Christmas some classics. And we're going to gain from these movies what we can do in our big screen Christmas series. The first movie that we're going to look at is the movie, the classic, Dr. Seuss, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. This is a great story. In high school, I was my senior year, I was president of the drama club, and so I got a chance to play the prestigious role of Max. Right there. The Grinch's dog. There I was, president of the drama club on the loyal leaders page, dressed up as Max. Well, this story, the story of the Grinch, this character decides that he's so upset with Christmas and he doesn't like Christmas. He doesn't like the joy that Christmas brings. That what he's going to do is he's going to stop Christmas from coming. And how he's going to do that is he's going to go down into Whoville, which is a place where all the Whos live. And he's going to steal all of their Christmas presents. All of their Christmas decorations. All of their Christmas food. All of their Christmas stuff, really. And he's going to steal that in hopes that he will stop Christmas from coming by doing that. And so the video clip that we've got is after he has gathered all this stuff, he stole it and he's ridden away, and he's waiting to hear the disappointment down in Whoville. And so we've got our clip.
Poo-poo to the Whos, he was grinchily humming. They're finding out now that no Christmas is coming. They're just waking up. I know just what they'll do. Their mouths will hang open a minute or two. Then the Whos down in Whoville will all cry, boo-hoo. That's a noise, grinned the Grinch, that I simply must hear. He paused, and the Grinch put a hand to his ear. And he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low, then it started to grow. Sounded glad. Every Who down in Whoville, the tall and the small, was singing without any presence at all. And the Grinch with his Grinch feet ice cold in the snow stood puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without ribbons. It came without tags. came without packages, boxes, or bags. He puzzled and puzzled till his puzzler was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from a store. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more.
Perhaps Christmas doesn't come from a store. Perhaps Christmas means just a little more. You know, of all the people that should understand the truth of that statement, it should be those who understand the power of the gift that was given at Christmas. Those who have seen Jesus Christ in their life and it's opened a door for a relationship with God. Those people should know, of all people on the face of the earth, those people should know that Christmas is more. That Christmas isn't something that's bought at a store. We of all people should know that we should put our faith in Him and not in our stuff. Let's go and pull out our bulletins this morning. Flip them over. We're going to fill these out so we can take them home with us. Our faith should be in Him, not in our stuff. I think a lot of us would think that our faith is in Jesus Christ. My faith isn't in my stuff. I would beg to differ. We put our security in a lot of things that aren't Jesus Christ. We put our trust in a lot of our stuff. We depend on our stuff instead of depending on Jesus. Though we would like to say our faith is in Jesus. In fact, Jesus addressed people who thought that way in Luke chapter 6. He says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord? Why do you say you have faith in me and yet you don't do what I've asked you to do? You do not do what I say. I will show you what he is like who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice. He is like a man building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rock. When a flood came, the torrent struck that house but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a man who built his house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed, and its destruction was complete." I believe a lot of us build our houses on the foundation of our stuff. Place our faith and our security and our trust. And we get frustrated when it doesn't work, when it doesn't come through for us, when our stuff lets us down, when our stuff isn't there. Think about it this way. What if Christmas morning you woke up and sometime during Christmas Eve someone snuck into your house as the Grinch did the Who's, and you were robbed? They took all of your Christmas presents, all of your Christmas decorations, all of your Christmas food. All right, now we're getting personal. They took your 42-inch flat-screen TV. They took your internet connection. In fact, they stripped your whole house of all your Cat 5. Took your wireless routers. They took your cell phones. They took your laptops. In fact, they even took your car. These thieves were so slick that they even took your bed out from underneath you while you were asleep. And you wake up with nothing. How are you going to react? And now answer the question, where's your faith? Is it in your stuff or is it in Jesus Christ? You know, we watch the Who's in Whoville and we watch their reaction. It's very easy for us to say, well, that's a storybook. Of course it's going to happen that way. What about real stories? What about real life stories? What about stories in our very Bible, like the story of Job? That's exactly what happened to him. Everything stripped away, taken away from him, and yet he did not move. He stayed faithful to God. You look at Daniel and his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, stripped out of their land, taken off into exile into a foreign country with foreign religions, foreign belief systems, foreign teachings. And they're placed before, and placed before them is an idol, and they're asked to worship this idol, or else they will be thrown into the fiery furnace of death. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they say, no, our faith's not in stuff. Our faith is in God. Their faith was in God, and their reasoning was because our God is able. Amen. They said, our God is able. He's able to save us. That's why our faith is in him. Now, whether or not he does or not, that's up to him. That's his decision. But we do know he is able to save us. And so I ask you this morning, where's your faith? Is it in your stuff? Or is it in Jesus Christ? Let's let these third-party icons be memory buttons. Psychological buttons that trigger our memory. So that when you see the Grinch in the mall, or you're flipping through the channels and you see him on TV, that you are reminded, where's my faith? Where's my faith? Is it in my stuff or is it in Jesus Christ? You know, we look at these stories and we understand that faith involves trust. Faith involves trust because God is faithful. He's proven it, and so we need to trust him. That's faith. Faith involves trust. Faith also involves security. We look through our stuff for security. We have all sorts of forms of security. Locks on our doors, alarm systems, life insurance, car insurance. Not saying being prepared is wrong. But our true source of security should be in Jesus Christ. Faith involves security because God is able. We have to focus on that. We have to realize that. No, God is able, and I can put my security in that. Because our stuff, it'll break down. It'll let you down. We've had it happen. We've been stranded on the side of the road. We've been looking at our refrigerator and thinking about all the food that's going to go to waste because it broke. But our security in Christ, that's solid. I remember as a child trying to fall asleep Christmas Eve. Wasn't that just the worst task in the world? I look forward to Christmas morning, but the day that I looked least forward to was Christmas Eve. Because it was like my parents put this unbearable burden on me. I just could not do it. All right, now you need to lay in bed and you need to fall asleep. I can't do it. I was so excited. Christmas was a big day at our house, and I was so excited. And I think we've all been there, haven't we? Let me have a show of hands. Come on. How many of you guys have had a hard time sleeping? How many of you guys still have a hard time sleeping Christmas Eve? And it's the excitement of that day and of giving and receiving gifts. And sometimes you've got a little hint about something you might get. And you're excited about that, and you're anticipating that. And I don't think that's wrong at all. I don't think it's bad to be excited about that or to anticipate that. But when it gets dangerous is when our excitement and our anticipation and our stuff overshadows our excitement and anticipation that we have in Jesus Christ. When it overpowers, when it completely takes over the position of hope that we should have in Jesus Christ. That we as Christians, we know that our hope should be in him. Not in getting more stuff. We've talked about this before when we talk about stewardship. As Americans, we are addicted to getting more stuff. You got a 42-inch TV. Oh, I got to get a 50-inch. I got to get more. In fact, it almost doesn't feel like you're American if you don't have this desire to get more stuff. Bigger, better, newer. But our hope should be in him. Hebrews chapter 6 talks about our hope. He compares it to an anchor. If you imagine an anchor that drives down in through the sea waters and into the ocean floor that holds this whole ship steady and in one place. He describes this anchor that goes in for us. in through the temple, in through the thick curtains, into the holy place, the most holy place, where priests went in once a year, and this was the closest that you could get to God. This was the most intimate you could be with God. And the Hebrews writer says that through Jesus Christ, our hope is an anchor straight into that room. Through Jesus Christ, we have been anchored into a relationship with God, a close, intimate relationship with God. That's where our hope rests. It's firm. It's secure. Before that, he talks about this hope, and that this hope has been brought to us by two things that are unchangeable. That God promised it, and then on top of a promise, God made an oath that he was going to keep his promise. Kind of redundant. God wanted to make sure that we got it. And the Hebrews writer says, by these two things are unchangeable because God doesn't lie. He gave us a promise and he gave us an oath that he was going to keep his promise. And that's where our hope rests in. And that's the hope that we should run to, that we should flee from all the things of this world, that we should get rid of the hopes that we have here in place of one hope. And the idea is running to that hope, fleeing and clinging to that one hope. Where is your hope this season? Is it in getting more stuff? Or are you like Chevy Chase in the popular Christmas movie? And you're hoping for that Christmas bonus. Is that where your hope is? Are you hoping for a big raise this year? Is your hope in a new toy? A new gadget? Or a new appliance? Where's your hope? You know, Romans chapter 8 talks about this hope, and he says, the hope that we have is a hope without seeing. We don't see what we're hoping for. And he goes in to explain that, and he says, who hopes for what he already has? You don't. You hope for something you don't yet have. And that's our hope. This is what we're hoping for. And he says, well, if we hope for this, then we need to patiently hope for this. Now, I want to clarify this. Patiently waiting for this hope doesn't mean hoping without excitement. Patience doesn't mean without anticipation. In fact, a little study on the Greek there, through patient endurance we eagerly wait, is a better translation of that sentence. Patient endurance means that no matter what other hope looks enticing, we're enduring and patiently holding on for that hope, which is great. And in the process, ooh, we're excited about it. Like Christmas Eve, and you just can't fall asleep. Excitement, anticipation. We eagerly wait. Hope involves anticipation. Why does it involve anticipation? Because our hope's awesome. We're going to heaven, people. Amen. I get to be made clean today and made perfect then. No more pain, no more hurt, no more death, no more sorrow, no more tears. No more burnt toast. No more flat tires. No more bills. That's a hope to anticipate. Our hope is exciting. It involves excitement because our hope is sure. It's like this anchor. It's for sure. God made a promise in two ways. Two things that are unchangeable. God can't lie. Our hope is for sure. I believe I speak for most of us, if not all of us, that we've had a moment in time where we've been expecting a certain Christmas present. Maybe you've gotten some hints and some clues that you're getting a certain gift. And you're thinking, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. And then when you get that particular gift, it's really not what you expected it to be. It's really a letdown. Or sometimes you don't know what the gift is, but you know who's giving you the gift, and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be great, this is going to be great, and it turns out you get socks. This hope is not like that at all. We can be excited about this hope because this hope is for sure. It will happen. And no matter how excited you are, it will not be enough to compare to what we are hoping for. So be excited. You know, as we reflect on things that we hope for, and we honestly ask ourselves, where is my faith? We have to allow God to make changes in our lives. We can't just sit in here and think, you know, that's a really unique way of looking at how the Grinch stole Christmas. If the Holy Spirit is convicting us, we need to move on these things. We need to shift our faith, put our faith back in Jesus. And I don't care where you are on the mountain of maturity as a Christian, there's always room to put more faith in Jesus Christ. There's always a way to be more excited and anticipate more of the hope that we have for sure waiting for us. And that's very important, because as I watch these two things, faith and hope, as they mature, depending on which way they go, as they mature towards Christ or as they mature towards our stuff, they often lead to love. You put your faith in something, you put your hope in something, you're going to end up loving it. And that's great when we're talking about Jesus Christ, but it's so dangerous when we're talking about your stuff. Our love should be focused on Him, not in our stuff. I believe if we would have taken a survey at the beginning of church this morning, and you would have sat down and filled out a card and it said, "My love is focused on Jesus Christ," I believe most of us would have checked, "Oh yeah, got it. I'm there. I love Jesus. That's why I'm here on Sunday morning. I brave this weather, whole 1 inch of snow." I don't think our lifestyles agree with that answer, though. I think we're fooling ourselves. Think about the last time you called in sick to work. "I never call in sick to work." I hear people say that. Think about the last time you decided not to go to work because the weather wasn't great. Now think about the last time you skipped church just because you were tired. Because there was 1 inch of snow and tons of salt on the road, and it was cold. I mean, the proof's right there. That's cold, hard truth. Because that reveals where your commitment is, where your devotion is. Are you more committed to your work or to worship? When was the last time you sat down and watched a 30-minute show on TV? I believe most of us would watch more than 30 minutes worth of TV in a week. When was the last time you sat down just for 10 minutes in God's Word? Your lifestyle tells on you. See, love takes hope, or love takes devotion, rather. Love takes commitment. Where do you spend your time? Where do you spend your resources? Where do you spend your money? Where do you exhaust your energy? Those are the things you love because you're devoted to them, because you're committed to them. When was the last time you spent time in meaningful, undisturbed, undistracted, one-on-one prayer with God? I mean, if you really love Him, if you're really devoted to Him, then that shouldn't have been too long ago. When was the last time that you sacrificially gave to God? When you sacrificially did something for God? You see what I mean? Our lifestyles tell on us, and I believe if we would have answered that question and truly looked at our lifestyle, we might not have checked what we thought we would have checked. You know, we know how to love because of how God loved us. Look at how God loved us. Romans chapter 5, verses 6 through 8, talks about that He loved us even while we were still rebels, even while we were still sinners, even while we were still enemies, even while we were still disobedient. On the other team, He still loved us. He still sent His Son for us. John chapter 3, 1 John chapter 3 starts off verse 1. And He wants us to consider, He wants us to think about the love that the Father has lavished on us. Think about that for a moment. Let that soak in. The love that the Father has lavished on us. We get to be children of God. That's great stuff. He continues in chapter 4 and he talks about how God loved us so much that He gave His only Son, reminding us of that truth. It's in John chapter 4 where we get that famous verse that God is love. Later in John chapter 4, verse 9, it says that we love because he first loved us. God showed us how to love. He showed us what love is. He showed us what love looked like. He showed us the attitude of love. He showed us the action of love. And yet we take what he has taught us and we use it on our stuff, instead of taking it back and loving him back with it. We don't know how to love except for how God has shown us how to love. And we use that love on our stuff. You know, love involves devotion. I know it involves devotion because he is devoted to us. He's shown it since day one. God has been devoted to us. Love involves devotion. Love also involves commitment because God is worthy. You look at all those other things that you're committed to, and you compare them to God, and not a one of them is anywhere near as worthy as God is of your commitment. Love involves commitment. And this morning, if you look at your bulletin, you'll notice that we've talked about faith, hope, and love. That's a common triad in the Christian walk. We see it in a number of different places. At the bottom of your bulletin, you've got a few scriptures there, some of the more popular places that that is found. So this morning, as we reflect on a secular movie, on a secular truth that has been brought out between the Grinch and the Who's in Whoville, and understanding that their hope wasn't in their stuff, their faith wasn't in their stuff, their love wasn't in their stuff, I want us to be able to reflect on that and let that be a memory button for us to make us ask ourselves, where is my faith, hope, and love right now? Is it in my stuff or is it in God? And that's going to change how you act. That's going to change how you think. Not just through the Christmas season, but from this day forward. Christmas. Christmas, the time when we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. The time when we remember the greatest gift ever given. When God came to earth, and there in that animal's feeding trough was little Jesus. Little baby hands. Baby hands are the best, aren't they? Little baby feet. Little baby heartbeat. A little baby mind. But yet inside that baby, inside that mind was the mind that created all that we see and so much more that we don't. Inside that heart was the love that we would never be able to truly comprehend, a love so great that we would never be able to even comprehend, I believe, a portion of the love that little heart beheld. When God came to earth, you know, when Jesus came to earth, Jesus was holy, W-H. Holy. That's 100%. I want you to write that down in your bulletins. 100% transcendent. Now, that's a big churchy word. Let me explain that word. Transcendent means that he was holy with an H first. Set apart. He was 100% transcendent. And at the same time, Jesus was holy. That's 100% again. Go and write that down. 100% incarnate. Once. It's another big church word. Incarnate means he was involved in the world. He came into humanity. God became a man. God with us. That's what Emmanuel means. God with us. While Jesus was here on earth, Jesus could be fully involved in mankind because he was fully transcendent in his morals, in his thinking, in his heart. Jesus could get down and dirty with the dirtiest. He could get with the sickest, the most contagious. And yet, he was all right because his mind, his morals were transcendent. The only way he could be incarnate was to be transcendent. This is an idea that we're going to come back to throughout the series. I want to introduce it to you so you can chew on it a little bit and think about it. Before we leave today, though, I would like to connect this to what we've learned today about faith, hope, and love. We, as we follow Jesus' example, we can only be as incarnate, that is, in the world, as we are transcendent, that is, holy and set apart. Let me repeat that. We can only be as incarnate as we are transcendent. We can only be in the world as much as we are holy and set apart. Faith, hope, and love. For us to be transcendent, to be holy, to be set apart, we have to get a grip on where our faith, where our hope, where our love is. Because we've been asked to be incarnate. We've been asked to be in the world. We must be incarnate to come into contact with other people, to share the love of God, to share this gift of Jesus Christ. We must be in contact with other people. That's incarnate. You can't be there safely without being transcendent. We must be transcendent in order to be safe while we are in the world. See, if you're only transcendent this much, it's not safe to be any more incarnate than that. You've got a limited number of people that you can reach out to. A limited level of sickness, spiritual sickness. A limited level of hurting that you can expose yourself to. As you increase your transcendence, your holiness, your thinking, your morality, your obedience to God's command, God's righteousness living inside of you, as that increases, then you can become more incarnate and in contact with people who are hurting more, people who are involved in sin more, and you'll be safe. Not only will you be safe, but you need to be transcendent so that when you are there, that you can be effective in the world. We got to get a grip on our faith, hope, and love if we want to be these things. If you have weak faith, if you have wavering hope, if you have uncommitted love, then you're not going to be safe trying to reach out to people and be incarnate. You're not going to be able to fulfill Jesus' desire to get out there and be a witness. You're not going to be effective. But if you have secure faith, an excited hope that are both founded in a devoted, committed love, then you can go, and you can go as deep as you are high and reach into the depths of humanity as Christ did. We've got a number of Grinches in our lives. Who would have ever thought that the Grinch would have turned around? Let's take a look at a clip that happens after our last clip.
And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say that the Grinch's small heart grew 3 sizes that day. And then the true meaning of Christmas came through, and the Grinch found the strength of 10 Grinches plus 2. And now that his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he whizzed with his load through the bright morning light. With a smile in his soul, he descended Mount Crumpet, cheerily blowing hoo-hoo on his trumpet. He rode into Whoville, he brought back their toys, he brought back their floof to the Who girls and boys. He brought everything back, all the food for the feast. And he himself, the Grinch, carved the roast beast.
Wouldn't that be great to see that happen in real people? That's just a cartoon. That's just a pointless Christmas story that has nothing to do with Christ. I've seen that happen with real people. I've seen them come in contact with an example of Jesus Christ, and I've seen their heart grow. I've seen their life change. I've seen their actions redirect. That can happen if we are examples. So this Christmas season, as you're shopping, as you're in the malls, and you see a portrait of the Grinch, or you see a little town of Whoville, or you're flipping through the channels one evening and you see this cartoon or maybe the movie with Jim Carrey, pause for a moment. Let it be a memory button to remind you that you need to put your faith, hope, and love in Jesus Christ and not in your stuff. And let it remind you that people are watching. And when they see someone who is totally sold out, that can affect them. And that can cause change for the kingdom. Let those things happen this season instead of being disgusted, instead of being frustrated. And allow this secular movie to bounce us back into a more centered Christ Christmas.